I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
First down and 10 now from the Seminole 15. Brandon from the pocket throws to the far side of the end zone. Touchdown, Notre Dame! Alizé Mack with his second touchdown grab of the night. It's now 31-6, Irish.
That highlight earlier in the year, Notre Dame putting away Florida State en route to their 12-0 regular season. Welcome back in. Nick Szczepkowski, Greg Gabriel with you, getting you ready for your NFL Sunday. Bears and Rams tonight on the lakefront as well to get you ready for biggest game of the year so far this season for the Bears. Going to get back to that in just a moment here, but time to take a little bit of a timeout. Talk some college football. The Irish are headed to the college football playoff for the first time since that was brought into college football in 2014. The Heisman Trophy awarded last night. All that to get to. Plenty more as well. Now we go back to out the hotline from Irish Illustrated, the senior editor there, Tim Priester, kind enough to join us this morning on the show. Good morning, Tim. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you.
How you doing, Timmy? How you been, buddy?
Hey, good, Greg. How are you?
Real good.
We've been talking a little bit, plenty of Bears and Rams to discuss, but hey, a lot more to get to as well in the world of college football. Notre Dame ends the regular season 12-0. It was just two short seasons ago at this point. We're sitting here looking at a team coming off a 4-8 year, looking like there was nowhere to go but up. How fast it happened might be surprising to some. What's going on in those 2 years that's kind of led about this college football playoff berth?
Well, I think it starts with Brian Kelly kind of reinventing himself. And certainly making some staff changes at all the coordinator positions. And Chip Long, I think, has done a tremendous job over the course as offensive coordinator. Over the course of 60 minutes, it's very difficult to stop him. He comes up with something during that 60-minute span. And then defensively with Clark Lee, it was kind of an inspired choice to choose him after Mike Elko. When Mike Elko left for Texas A&M, Clark Lee never been a defensive coordinator before, and they've been outstanding. So, you know, I think that it started with the significant changes they made in the coaching staff. And then Brian Kelly kind of reinventing himself a little bit, stepping back a little bit, letting his coordinators do their jobs and kind of relating to the players on a better level than he had previously.
You know, Tim, looking at the defense, me from the outside looking in, it looks like Lee plays, even though it's a very similar scheme, to me, it's a little bit more aggressive. He attacks more. Is that your take also?
No, I would agree with that, Greg. I mean, certainly their defensive ends have taken it up a notch. And I think a real significant part of it is the safety play. The safety play is if you can make a 180-degree turn from the previous season, that's what Notre Dame's done. They weren't productive at all. Alohi Gilman, the transfer from Navy, came in, gave them some attitude. I think he rubbed off on Jalen Elliott, who was a very inconsistent player in 2017, to becoming a real playmaker on the back end. So, yeah, I would agree with that. When you have a pass rush, things always look better on the front end and the back end. Notre Dame is second in the country, or tied for second in yards per pass attempt against the defense, and Clark Lee's done a really nice job for them.
Yeah, you mentioned it with the pass rush being better, but you mentioned a guy there that I think is the unsung hero of this team. You hear the Jerry Tillery, you hear a Julian Love whenever you pick up any publication with this, but Alohi Gilman has been, whether it's the forced fumble in the USC game, it just seems like when that defense is in need of big-time play, big-time stop, as often as anyone, he's the guy that's provided it.
Nah, no doubt. And he also, in the previous game, prior to USC, had the two picks against Syracuse and Yankee Stadium. And a lot of people thought, you know, with what Syracuse could do offensively, that would be a tough game. And he and obviously a few others made sure that wasn't even close. But he's been great. Julian Okwara off the edge is just an unstoppable force for them. Their sack numbers aren't huge, but, you know, in today's world, the three-step drops and quick passing game makes that difficult at times. But there's no quarterback in the country, no matter how good you are. If you're putting pressure on them, you're going to make it difficult for him and their receiving core. And Notre Dame's doing a great job on the front end and the back end.
Tim, you got a tough game coming up against Clemson in the semifinals of the college football playoff. How do you see the matchups? You know, where's the strength of Notre Dame versus Clemson and then vice versa?
Yeah, this is a tough matchup. You know, Clemson's been averaging 12 wins a season for the last seven. Dabo Swinney has done a tremendous job. I think the toughest assignment is Clemson's D-line against Notre Dame's offensive line. I was in a conversation the other day. Somebody brought up, what if Notre Dame's offensive line from 2007, or 17 rather, was on the 2018 team? Then you would have an even matchup. But without McGlinchey and Nelson, and then Bars, who was playing his best football when he suffered a season-ending injury in the fifth game of the year, that's a tough assignment. The other one that I think is concerning to Notre Dame is just Clemson's ability to run the football with Travis Etienne and Tavian Feaster. They're averaging 260 yards rushing a game. Notre Dame's numbers are good against the rush, but I just think there have been times, especially in the last half of the year, when they've been gashed a little bit. So if Clemson gets near that 200-yard rushing mark, it's going to be a pretty tough day for Notre Dame.
Yeah, that could be a long afternoon. I look at it as the most important concern for Notre Dame is the right side of the Notre Dame offensive line against that Clemson defensive line. They're all pros on that Clemson line. They're all going to be drafted in the NFL. Three of them will be drafted this next April, and most of them will be high draft picks. And I think those guys got to pick it up a notch in order for Notre Dame to move the ball. I like the Notre Dame defense against the Clemson offense. I think it's you know, both sides of the – both teams, their defenses are very, very
right.
strong. And that's going to be – you know, how the Notre Dame defense can stop the Clemson offense is going to be the key, and then the right side of the Notre Dame line.
Yeah, I think that's why I bring up Chip Long, because he's a very creative offensive coordinator. If you just take the USC game, for example, it takes 60 minutes sometimes because that is not a real accomplished offensive line. But if you can get that Clemson, you know, you've got to throw a lot of misdirection at them. You have to test their eye discipline a little bit and get them flowing one way and take the flow the other way. Otherwise, that's a real tough matchup for that Notre Dame offensive line, which really is still developing as they head into the playoffs.
Speaking with Tim Priester from Irish Illustrated, he's the senior editor there. Follow him on Twitter for all of his Notre Dame work as well, at Tim Priester. Last time Notre Dame was on a stage this big, it was ugly, really, from the opening possession against Alabama, national championship game 2012. What's different this time against the Clemson team that, really, outside of Alabama, that's your most successful team in college football the last roughly decade or so? What's different about the Irish this time around?
I think it's a more well-rounded team. You know, that 2012 team, and they had some pros on that D-line, but offensively, it was a challenge every week. Tommy Reese had to come in and bail out Everett Golson at times that year. Ian Book has really been an inspiration for that offense. He can make all the throws. He opened up the playbook, the entire playbook for Chip Long. That's where they're so much better. They can score points. Whereas 6 years ago, that was really, really difficult. And then defensively, and even though there were pros on that defensive line in 2012, they didn't rush the passer nearly as well as this group does. So, you know, there are areas where this team has proven to be much more well-rounded than 2012.
I think you look at Notre Dame's defense, and the speed on the defense is so much better than that 2012 football team. You know, you look at the edge guys. The edge guys, they're not as big, they're not as brawny, but there's a lot more speed there, and there's more speed at the linebacker position. The secondary, too. I think overall, from the, you know, the front line all the way to the back end, it's a lot quicker and faster football team.
Yeah, as that draft approaches, Greg, you and I will be talking a lot about Tavon Coney and Drew Tranquil in that draft, Jerry Tillery up the middle, and then their corners. I mean, Julian Love was certainly a worthy finalist for the Jim Thorpe Award. He could have won it with his numbers better than his competition, but he's been great for 2 years. And Troy Pride Jr., the other cornerback, has really come on strong. So, yeah, I would agree, Greg. I mean, athletically, and that's what 2012 had. They had, you know, they had Lewis Nix in the middle. They had Stephon Tuitt off the edge, but those were bigger guys. I would agree. This is a more athletic defense.
Tim, what took so long for Ian Book to start? Because, I mean, that was a night and day once you saw it happen.
Yeah, they kind of, you know, once DeShone Kizer decided to enter the NFL draft, the job was kind of handed to Brandon Wimbush. He was a year further into the program than Ian Book was, and they liked his athleticism, the things that he could do with his legs. And last year, you know, he rushed for 800 yards. They were tremendous in the red zone. He had 14 rushing touchdowns, and it seemed like that was the right choice. But, again, getting back to Chip Long's playbook, they just could not run all the things that Chip Long's creativity would allow them to do. So I think it just finally reached a point. Give Long a lot of credit and Brian Kelly. They pulled the trigger. They were 3-0, but they were struggling, and they knew what was coming up. They were going to need more offense. And then, of course, give Ian Book a lot of credit. He hit the ground running. He played the game with a lot of confidence. And he can make all the throws as a college quarterback, and he's made the receivers better. He gets the football out quickly, gives them a chance to get their head and shoulders turned around so their yards after the catch are better. It was a pretty inspired move by the Notre Dame coaching staff.
You know, it's funny, Tim, because you got the same guys playing at wide receiver than he did at the beginning of the year, but all of a sudden, when Book came in at quarterback, those guys got a lot better.
Yeah, Boykin, Claypool, Chris Fink has been a weapon for them. Elizay Mack at tight end, really their top four receivers have all been a threat since Ian Book took over. And he's not the kind of guy that is going to be pinpointing or looking for one guy in particular. The open guy is the guy to throw to, and that's what Ian Book does.
Now they have the weird kind of, I don't know, the 3.5-4 weeks off between games, between the USC game and the Clemson game. How realistic is it? Where can Notre Dame get better in that time in preparation for Clemson?
That's really tough to say, Shep. I mean, I don't know. You know, I think the 12 regular season games pretty much tells you where they are. I think, for one thing, they can get healthier, but Clemson will have an opportunity to get healthier too. But Ian Book was playing with a broken rib the last couple weeks, so that's one. Drew Tranquil was hobbling on and off the field on a regular basis with multiple injuries. Khalid Kareem, one of their pass rushers, as well. So I think that the improved health will help. I'm not sure how much, you know, realistically, when you're looking at that offensive line against Clemson's defensive line, I'm not really sure how much progress they can make during that time. And that's probably the area of most concern heading into this game.
Tim, you got the early signing period coming up in, what, about a week and a half. What's Notre Dame have, like 22 commits right now?
Yeah, somewhere around there. They've done a really nice job. I mean, they've really replenished along the defensive line, which has become a strength for them, which is something that we rarely said in the previous years. You know, I think they've done a solid job at certainly along the offensive line, which has never been a problem, whether Harry Heastand was there or Jeff Quinn, who's now the offensive line coach. But I think getting back to what you said, Greg, about the team speed defensively, I think that's an area that they've addressed better. They've always been, you know, physical in the lines. They've always gotten their tight ends, but do they have enough speed off the edge? It's still difficult for them to get speed off the edge. That's never going to come naturally to them in the recruiting game because, quite frankly, most of that talent ends up down in SEC country most of the time in places like Clemson. So that continues to be the challenge. But again, I think their recent success has certainly helped Brian Kelly and his staff with this upcoming recruiting class.
Tim, how do they maintain this now? I mean, 12-0 is great. No one's going to complain about that. But whether they win by 30 against Clemson and go to the title game or if they get blown out by 30 and lose that, how do they maintain 12-0, 11-1 runs that marches to the college football playoff aren't just special, that they become more of the norm?
Yeah, it's tougher for Notre Dame. I mean, they're never going to be able to collect talent like Alabama and Clemson and Ohio State. It's just more difficult, whether it's academically, just the standards. A lot of kids don't want to choose the Notre Dame route because it's more difficult. The path of least resistance to the NFL is often the choice. So, I really think it rests on Brian Kelly, his efforts in the recruiting aspect of it. he was talking about just the other day, the continuity in the coaching staff. That's where Clemson has a huge advantage. Brett Venables has been there for, what, 7 or 8 years? I mean, here's a guy that could be and should be a head coach, and he has stayed there, whereas Notre Dame had to replace their coordinators after the last couple of years. So always more difficult for Notre Dame because of the academic standards that they set. But I think Brian Kelly has found a little something here the last couple of years. He needs to stick to the process. That's a term that he frequently uses, stick to the process. I think that they can keep this role going for a little while.
Tim Priester, senior editor, Irish Illustrated. Follow all of his work on Twitter as well, at Tim Priester. Appreciate taking the time this morning. We'll be checking out your work, Tim.
Guys, thank you. My pleasure.
Thanks, Tim. Talk to you soon.
Tim Priester from Irish Illustrated right there. Yeah, it's a game that I think matchup-wise, I'm not surprised Notre Dame's an underdog by any means. I was a little surprised when I saw the 11.5 next to their name as being that sizable as an underdog against Clemson. But I understand why it is that way.
Well, you know, you look at the common opponent, and the one common opponent is Syracuse. It's Syracuse at Clemson.
And Pitt. Pitt that gave Notre Dame the near nightmare by halfway through the season. But, yeah, Syracuse took them to the final, what, couple downs of the game.
There was I was watching that game, and I thought for a while Syracuse was going to pull it out, have the big upset.
That's Greg Gabriel. I'm Nick Shepkowski. This hour on the score being brought to you by New Mail Medical Center. Discover the new you, newmailmedical.com. Bears and Rams coming up tonight at Soldier Field, 7:20 kickoff in that one. Plenty to get to in terms of getting ready for that game. 11 o'clock today, we'll talk to Nathan Vasher. You know him from that Bears team, the last one that went to a Super Bowl. Get his thoughts on this Bears team. How does this Bears defense stack up with that one? All that to get to. How do the Bears attack the Rams? We'll discuss that and much more coming up next on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
With Todd, he's such a big man, and when he's running, he's very explosive. It's hard to bring him down with one man. Tackling wise, he's got great hands. He understands the pass game. They use him well, whether it's protection and then get out in the flat. He can run routes in empty formation. He does it all, there's weapons on that offense, and Sean does a great job of using them all.
Matt Nagy earlier this week talking about the Rams running game and just how damn good and valuable one Todd Gurley is. Welcome back in. Nick Shepkowski, Greg Gabriel with you up until noon today, getting you ready for Bears and Rams. As always, pregame show with Hub Arkish, Patrick Manley. That'll come your way today, actually, 4 o'clock until 7:20. That's when it'll be on the air. Postgame, right after the final whistle blows, it'll be Olin Krut, Big Cat Williams, and Hub Arkish, as always. You can go out and see the guys if you're out and about this evening. Leader Bar, 3000 West Irving Park Road here in the city. Meet the guys, watch the game, enjoy Miller Lite specials. It's all brought to you by Miller Lite. Hold true. That's coming up later on the score. But until noon today, you have myself and Greg Gabriel trying to break down this game and telling you why both of us have a little inkling. Both of us have the Bears winning. Not by a wide margin, not in dominating fashion, I don't think, by any way, shape, or form, but the way that this shapes up. Little things pointing in favor of the Bears, and I have them winning by a nose here tonight, and Greg mentioned it right at the start of the show. Same way, has the Bears winning by 3 points in this game. If they're going to do so, though, no doubt about it, they have to figure out a way to... You're not going to stop Todd Gurley. That just does not happen. It's one of those guys that you look at, like, the run he's been on of late. You don't just look at that and say, all right, completely take it away. How do they limit at least that guy, though, and keep him from being the reason or going off for 150 or 175 yards on the ground and just being a complete pain? How do they at least kind of limit the damage there?
You can't totally stop him, and... You know, what you don't want to see happen is have Gurley break the long run. Mm-hmm. That can be long run for a touchdown can be like that pick six last week. You know, it can break the spirit of the team. You know, if he gets 100 yards, he gets 100 yards, but let him work for that 100 yards.
Yeah.
You know, 3 and 4 a carry, not busting the 25 and 30 yarder. I think what's even more important for the Bears is to limit what he does in the pass game. You know, he's a very good receiver. He's got, like I said before, 46, 47 receptions, very good in the screen game. You get him out in space where he doesn't have the wiggle that Barkley had last week, but he's more powerful, and he's got very similar speed. For a guy who's as big as he is, he can run. you just got to contain him to the point where he's going to get what he can get, but don't let him make the big play.
Is there a weakness there with the Bears? Defensively, it's been the story all year, all one of the best defenses, if not the best in the league. But finally, we saw Thanksgiving Day, the Lions make an effort with LeGarrette Blount as that game went on. Last week, Saquon Barkley, who he might be the best running back in the NFL right now. I know Todd Gurley's coming to town tonight, but Barkley's right there, steps into the league, and he's awesome. Is there a weakness there in stopping the run that the Bears have? That they're so good in pass rush, so good in pass coverage that we've kind of just teams haven't tried it as much?
You know, I take the Detroit game, the second Detroit game, and I kind of throw it out mm-hmm. as an anomaly. Short week on the road. Was it the second game in 85 hours or something like that?
Third divisional game in, 12 days or 11 days or whatever it was?
You know, so I think when you got to the second half, that defense was tired, mm-hmm. you know, and it started to show, and Detroit was picking up some yardage. You know, this is a different story. And actually you have a few extra hours to rest because it's a night game. You're playing at home. You know, it's funny because during the Fox years, and I like John. He's a friend of mine. I worked with him in New York. At the same time, Bears had no home field advantage. The whole 3 years that John was here, they'd lost a lot more games than they won at home. And just this year alone, I think New England's the only game that they've lost at home, and they've played very, very strong. So I think that has become an advantage for this Bears team.
Well, how much of that is, what am I looking for here? Causation, correlation type of thing. Bears are a better team. Bears are winning games, so fans are more into it. Like, that's probably why. Is it as simple as that of why the home field has become more of an advantage? Because you never hear Soldier Field being like Seattle or Kansas City or like the Metrodome used to be of, oh, great home field advantage. You don't really ever hear that thrown about with Soldier Field outside of the bear weather thing.
Well, part of it is just the acoustics of the stadium, you know, mm-hmm. how it's built. Some stadiums are just louder than others. You look at the capacity of Soldier Field; it's the smallest stadium in the league, too.
Right, and it's
this year. Year it's not because the Chargers are playing at a soccer field and it's got mm-hmm. about a 25 or 30,000 seat capacity. But I think that has something to do with it. But at the same time, it's really important for the Bears fans to try to control this game a little bit, and that's be loud from kickoff on, and especially when the Rams have the ball, make it difficult for them to audibilize because it is so loud. You know, it's you're going to see the players trying to get the crowd loud during the course of the game. You know, and that I think. I don't know if fans understand that sometimes.
That
it's really, really important for them to get into the game and be that. I don't like the term 12th man, but you could say it because they're a part of creating that home field advantage.
Well, that's so much of the thing is I think most people see that and they think of college football because you have the 100,000 seat stadiums and the bands playing and whatever else and the pop of the pageantry. You don't think of the home field advantage the same way in the NFL for whatever reason it may be. But in terms of actually making a difference in the game, as a guy who's scouted, the guy's been around this league for decades and decades and decades, what is the difference that can be made there? Like when being loud, okay, so Rams are facing a 3rd and 7 tonight in a tie game, middle of the fourth quarter, and they're sitting in midfield, 3rd and 7. Fans being loud, what benefit does that give the Bears outside of, I don't know, getting extra adrenaline going, not that they necessarily need it?
You know, I've never seen it here. I've seen it in Buffalo, born and raised there, and I went to a lot of games at New Era Field, and it can get very loud in that stadium. And that stadium has when they first built it, it was an 80,000-seat stadium. Now they've reconfigured a little bit, and I think it's about 76,000. But it can get very loud. And there were points when the Bills were on their Super Bowl run in the early 90s, mm-hmm. there were games that I was at that stadium where, and some of them I was scouting, where the officials would basically threaten the home team with a penalty if the fans didn't
quiet down
a little bit because it became such an unfair advantage for the Bills. So, yeah, that's a situation you'd like to see tonight where the the crowd, the home crowd, takes over the game.
Yeah, it's just something you don't really ever associate with Soldier Field or with Bears fans. It just hasn't been the case. And I guess when you're playing with, what, a hair over 60,000 people and you got stadiums across the league that are north of 70, 75,000, it makes it that much more difficult when you take away 10,000 bodies. But I just have never seen Soldier Field kind of presented at least that way of being one, oh, this is one of the toughest places to play. Here or there it is because the Bears happen to be good, but they haven't had any sustained runs of sustained success, at least since I've been watching football since the early 90s. 312-644-6767, the telephone number to call. It's Nick Shepkowski, Greg Gabriel with you this morning, 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Bottom of the hour being brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Give the gift of live sports this season with the Chicago Wolves Holiday Pack. Each pack includes tickets to the game of your choice, merchandise, food, free parking, all at one low price. Visit ChicagoWolves.com or call 1-800-THE-WOLVES for tickets on all that. Bears and Rams this evening, been discussing that quite a bit. And you mentioned it a little bit with Eric at home. Marcus Peters, the Rams go out, they get him and his, what was a troubled in ways pass with the Chiefs. He had the personal foul for throwing the flag, kind of a guy that's been known to go off at certain times. He's been a disaster this year. He has been, when you pull up the numbers against him this season, quarterbacks, when they simply target him, have thrown at a quarterback rating of 126 when targeting him. For perspective, Drew Brees leads the league in quarterback rating. He's at 123.6. Is it just a guy not mixing with a certain scheme? Why did he go from Pro Bowl? I don't remember if he was an all-pro level quite or not. Whichever he was very good last year. Either way, why the drop? Because he's been disastrous.
You know, this is a player, and I hope he's not listening.
I think he's probably got better things to do on a Sunday morning, but maybe he'll get wind of it.
You know, going back to when he was in college, you know, he got kicked off the team at the University of Washington. He has issues. That's part of who he is, part of his DNA. Andy Reid will take chances on guys like that, but he draws a line and say, you know, you've got X amount of chances. We're going to, you know, we'll give you that. After that, you're gone. Well, that was the case. You know, Andy thought that to keep him, it was becoming detrimental to the Kansas City Chiefs football team. And so they moved him. And actually, I think when you look at the way he played for the Kansas City Chiefs, what they got in return was really minimal. You know, it looked almost like a bad trade. But now, looking at it months later, turned out to be a fair trade because he hasn't played up to that capabilities. But same thing. He's got the talent to dominate a game from the corner position. You just hope it doesn't start tonight.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. How much does it help him that Aqib Talib seems to be off of his snap count, or at least it's not going to be as extreme a snap count like it's been the last week with him?
Well, you know, he's a guy that's getting older. He's, what, 32 years old?
Yeah.
I mean, for a corner, that's getting up in the years, can't run like he did when he was a younger player. He's another guy that's had some issues too.
Right, I was just going to say, speaking of
but another very, very talented game, a guy, though, coming out and on paper, you know, when they assembled some of these guys during the offseason, they brought in Sue, you know, they tried to get Mack, they brought in Peters, they brought in Talib, you know, they were trying to put together one of the stronger defenses in the league. On paper, they had it. They haven't played that well, but at the same time, they're capable of it. And that's the scary part. You just don't, you know, because they have, actually the last few weeks, they haven't been as dominant as they have been. And started, I think, with the Kansas City game. You just hope it doesn't, they don't find the right way, so to speak, tonight against the Bears. You know, you want the Bears to be able, Bears got to put some yardage up and get some points. You know, I think they're going to have to get, you know, both teams are capable of scoring. I see because of the strengths of the defense, it's not going to be as high scoring as people think. I don't think it's going to be a shootout like you saw with the Rams and KC. That game was played out in L.A. This game's going to be played in Chicago. You got different weather conditions. I think it's going to be more of a 24-21 type game. We'll find out a little later today.
That's Greg Gabriel. I'm Nick Shepkowski. You have questions, comments about the Bears and Rams tonight, we'll take your calls. 312-644-6767. bottom of the hour being brought to you by Get Covered Illinois. The deadline to enroll in health insurance on Get Covered Illinois is approaching fast. Must sign up by December 15th to get covered for 2019. Go to getcoveredillinois.gov or call 1-866-311-1119 to shop for a plan or schedule free in-person help. The Rams have lost one game this year. They nearly lost two. One of them, the loss was on the road. The near loss, also a road game. And the blueprint is kind of out there and meets up a little bit with what the Bears are going to do tonight. I'll explain in detail. We'll go over that next on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
And here is Gurley, and he'll go in for the touchdown. And a great block by the left tackle, Andrew Whitworth, and Gurley with a 10-yard touchdown.
Watch this tempo. Break the huddle, sprint up to the line of scrimmage. The Broncos moving around right there. They're not ready. You got Whitworth. You got Saffold running up there.
That from way back in week six, Todd Gurley went off for 208 rushing yards and a couple of scores. But the Rams held to their lowest output of the year, 23-20. They beat the Broncos that afternoon out in the Mile High City. Welcome back in. Nick Shepkowski and Greg Gabriel with you up until noon today, getting you ready for Bears and Rams. And why do I look at that game? Why do I look at Rams-Broncos from the middle of October and have it apply to today? Because I think that there's a lot of different things that you look at from that game, from the way the Broncos were constructed, that say Bears follow that blueprint, they're going to be in business for a win today. And it starts with that. Obviously, the highlight is Todd Gurley running for a touchdown, and he was a difference in that game. But Denver able to sack Jared Goff that day five different times. That's where it starts with me. Like, you can contain Todd Gurley. You're not going to stop Todd Gurley. He's all world for a reason. Put him down for probably 150 yards of total offense today because you can pretty much do that on a weekly basis with them. But in terms of the pass rush Denver was able to come up with that day, you want to factor in cold weather as well being something. I think it was 30 degrees or so in Denver that afternoon. It's going to be colder today in Chicago on the lakefront, especially when the sun goes down tonight. Like, I look at that as the blueprint to success, and the Bears just need to make a couple more offensive plays than Denver did and finish the job.
Denver held Goff to, I think, 201 yards passing in that game.
Yeah, just 14 completions.
Right, and yeah, that's going to be the key. You've got to have, good coverage in the secondary, but the pressure up front, we talked about it with Eric, you know, the interior of the Rams' offensive line, the weakness, actually, it's one of the weak. When you look at the Bears, some of the weaknesses are very, very similar. Mm-hmm. Interior of the offensive line, you know, you've got Sue and Aaron Donald going against the interior of the Bears line. You've got Eddie Goldman and Akeem Hicks going against the interior of the Rams line. So there's a lot of similarities, say, when you look at the strengths and weaknesses of each team.
Yeah, I look at that, and like for Denver, for me, obviously things start with Vaughn Miller, and he gets deserved love. He's not quite on Aaron Donald territory here in 2018, but he's had a career that he's probably going to end up in Canton one day. He's got a Super Bowl MVP to his name, and he's been one of the best, two or three defensive players in this league going on a good 7 years, 8 years now. I mean, he's headed for Canton. He's had a heck of a career, but I mean, they add in this year the draft pick out of North Carolina State, Chubb. He had three sacks that afternoon against the Rams. Like, I just look at that part and kind of what Denver was able to do and some of where the strengths are with Denver, at least defensively, or where strengths sit in for the Bears as well. Take advantage of that part of it. And I trust the Bears offense to make more plays, kind of like what Eric Edholm talked about with us an hour or so ago. I know that Mitch Trubisky's coming off of 2 weeks of being off due to injury, but I liked where he was kind of at before that injury took place. Now, the hit from Harrison Smith on that shoulder, and okay, are there some lingering effects? Is there rust? Yeah, those are things you always have to be weary of, but I trust this offense a heck of a lot more than I trust Denver's in that. You consider everything else going into it, I think the offense can make enough plays against this Rams team.
Well, he's had, you know, a few weeks for that injury to heal. He was throwing it in practice at the end of last week, had a full week of practice this week. You know, unless he takes another hit in that same area, mm-hmm. I don't see it as being any kind of a problem. I'll tell you what could be an interesting matchup, and again, it's looking at the Rams' offensive line. Andrew Whitworth gets a lot of notoriety, but he's like 35 years old. He's not the most athletic guy. I remember scouting him when he came out. You know, he's a guy that looked like he was a natural right tackle because he didn't have the great lateral agility. But he's big and strong, and he does play on the left side, and he plays at a high level. But still, that's a guy that either Leonard Floyd or Khalil Mack should be able to get around. And the same with Rob Havenstein, the right tackle. Neither one of those guys are the most athletic tackles, you know, in the game. They're big, brawny type guys that might be better in the run game than they are in the pass block game. You know, what's interesting too is looking at the Bears defense early in the season, Mack was getting a lot of his production and he was playing predominantly on the left side and Leonard Floyd was playing on the right side. Last few weeks, it's been flip-flop. Mack's been more on the right side. Floyd's been more on the left side. Floyd's actually picked up his sack production mm-hmm. since he's played more on that side. And Mack's sack production has gone down. Now, granted, it could because he's playing against, you know, the other team's left tackle. But I think, you know, I wonder how they're going to attack that tonight if you're going to see Mack more on the Bears' left side where he goes against Havenstein.
What's the thinking behind that? Because you pointed out, like, what is the – is it as simple as, all right, my best against their best and it allows for a better opportunity for Floyd to shine? Or what's kind of the philosophy that goes into switching that up after it had been so damn successful early on?
Yeah, I think you're looking at matchups and the strength of each player. And it's not that they stay
right
in
no,
that it's one set. It's just that Mack was almost strictly on the left side early in the season. And he played on the left side with the Raiders. I think it was as he got more comfortable within this scheme, they started giving more reps on the right side. And now you're starting to see that. But I think part of it, too, is Mack has had his best production, or not Mack, Leonard Floyd has had his best production. It's been from the left side. So you want to get good production from both players. And we weren't seeing sacks from Floyd at all early in the year. Now he's getting more pressures and sacks coming off that left side. But he's going against the weaker offensive lineman.
Yeah, but it's one of those of, I mean, it's better than what you probably thought of Leonard Floyd the first 5-6 weeks or so into this year, even if it comes with a little bit of like an asterisk next to it. 312-644-6767, the telephone number to call. Text messages always welcome as well, 67011. It's Nick Shepkowski and Greg Gabriel. We're getting ready for Bears and Rams tonight at Soldier Field, 7:20 kickoff as the Bears on Sunday Night Football for the second time in the last now four games, taking on the Rams, team with just one loss. They sit right now, if the playoffs were to begin today, they'd be the number one seed in the NFC. And anything that happens in the NFC playoffs would obviously be going through LA. We'll take your telephone calls getting ready for this game a bit. Take your text messages as well. Eli puts on the screen. Eli Herskovich, our producer this morning. Scott Boras confirms Kyler Murray won't play in the NFL. He's sticking to baseball where he was, I believe, the 7th overall pick of the Oakland A's last year in the June draft. You buy him? You buying that? Is that report just out saying, okay, he says that he's going to play anything that he – is he going to dip his toe in the NFL in any way, shape, or form, you think, or is he for sure a baseball guy?
I think he's going to end up playing baseball, but at the same time, leverage is always a good thing.
Right.
And so, you know, you want to play the game. But now you look at, okay, who's making the statement? Scott Boras. He's a baseball agent. He's never negotiated a football contract, and if – Murray wants to play some more football, he's going to have somebody else doing that. You know, neither one of us know exactly what that contract – he's with the A's, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Neither one of us know exactly how that contract is written or can he get out of that contract with the A's if he wants to play football. But still, you know, he's a first-round pick in baseball. He's never going to be a first-round pick. I saw Todd McShay from ESPN said he thought he's a first-round pick. He's nuts. The guy's 5'9", 5'9½". There are no 5'9½" quarterbacks in the NFL. Russell Wilson is the only one that's under 6 foot. He's 5'10½". You know, Drew Brees measured at the combine 6 foot. He might be 5'11 and a half. Baker Mayfield, 6 foot, a half inch. You know, you're taking 3 inches off of that when you go to Murray. And playing behind, you know, NFL linemen and going against NFL defensive linemen, it's a different world, especially when you got to stay in the pocket. You know, he's not going to be able to do in the NFL what he does at Oklahoma, even though the offenses might be a little bit similar.
Yeah, and what was, you know, he only had, what, a two-year window of real success in the NFL? What was Doug Flutie?
Yeah, but that was a while ago. Flutie
right,
was,
I know,
yeah,
years ago now. God, it feels like
Flutie
it wasn't that
was
long ago.
5'9 and a half, 5'10.
Yeah, but saying like guy. That's the only real example that there is for something, someone that short, right?
But it was really his second go around in the NFL before he got
booted up to Canada. Yeah.
Before he had moderate success. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very, very difficult. You know, you go back and look at Chase Daniel the last couple games. Chase Daniel's just over 6 feet tall. And he had passes batted back in his face.
Right.
You know, it's very difficult for shorter quarterbacks to throw over the middle. If you can throw on the perimeter, it's one thing. But you've got to find those open windows and see through those big trees, so to speak, in order to get the ball out of your hand. And for a shorter guy, it's more difficult.
That's Greg Gabriel. I'm Nick Szczepkowski, 312-644-6767. We take a timeout now. But a man responsible for one of the most exciting plays in Bears history was a starter on the last team to go to the Super Bowl and one time led the NFC in interceptions for a season. Nathan Vasher joins us next on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.